Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, everyone's favourite irregular Tech Weekly Podcast. Today I'm joined by reviews editor at Tech Advisor and Macworld, Chris Martin.
Hey, hey.
Senior staff writer at Tech Advisor France, Caroline Vernier.
Bonjour.
And staff writer at Digital Arts, Miriam Harris.
Hello.
Today we're really running the gamut of topics, but we're going to start with everyone's favourite new phone, the iPhone X. And we've actually got one in front of us here, haven't we, Chris?
Yeah, we're having a little look now. I've had it since Monday following the Macworld review. So I'm reviewing it for Tech Advisor, and yeah.
It's... I just asked you what you thought of it, and your review was, yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. I don't normally use an iPhone, but...
I did want
an iPhone for a long time when they first, you know, when they first brought them out, but they were too expensive for me, so Android was the better option.
And this one is no different.
Yeah. This is kind of no different, but yeah, I kind of got used to Android after a few years and then just kind of got not too fussed about iPhone, but I think I would potentially have this, but not if I was paying for it.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? So how much is an iPhone?
Well, this 10? One, it starts at 999, and that's for the lower storage model, but it goes up a little bit, maybe about 250 quid if you want the higher model.
So if you're on a contract, which you're probably going to be unless you're a lunatic, who is it, Marco Pierre White's son, who's always the first person to buy one, he of the tattooed face. But how much would it cost you on a contract?
I think it's around 80 quid a month.
That's still a lot.
That's a lot.
I don't know for sure, but it's somewhere around that kind of mark.
It's a lot of the paycheck.
And you're probably going to want the higher storage model, right?
Yeah.
Because it jumps from 64 to 256.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much 64 is for most iPhone users these days, but there's no SD card slot, obviously, as usual. So
I'm on a 32 and it's just always full.
So. Yeah, always.
So 64 might be enough for most people, but I think still a lot are going to want the bigger one.
Yeah. Should we talk specs? We decided that it's quite heavy.
Yeah, it's heavy. So it's 174 grams, which is, I mean, it's not the heaviest phone. You do get some pushing 200 grams, but not for this size. So the main new feature is the screen, because this is the, you know, Apple's gone bezel-less like the Galaxy S8, LG G6, and announced yesterday the OnePlus 5T. That's just what all the phone makers are doing this year to make everything seem a bit more modern. So the screen size is 5.8 inches on the diagonal. It's got a higher resolution than any other iPhone. So it's jumped up to 458 pixels per inch, which is still a way off some of the Android rivals. But to be honest, when you get over kind of 400, everything's pretty sweet there.
Nice.
So yeah, there's no bezels anymore. That was especially a problem. I hated all the iPhone Plus models because they were 5.5 inch, but the bezels just made the phone itself absolutely huge.
Yeah.
So this is actually a lot smaller than a Plus, yet the screen's bigger. And the only kind of the big sacrifice is that obviously there's no home button. So every iPhone user has got used to the home button, the Touch ID fingerprint scanner, that's gone. They haven't even moved it to the back like some thought they might do. I thought they might put it in the Apple logo at the back. I thought that would be quite cool.
Is there a phone that has one on the back? Is it the Google phone?
Quite a few phones have had them on the back. Yeah, the Pixels, OnePlus has done the same thing. They've moved it to the back to get a bezel-free design. Various Huawei phones over the years have had it on the back. It's not a big problem.
Yeah.
Only when it's sitting on the desk and obviously it's, you know, you can't get to it. But then you can always just type in a whatever your backup security is.
So how's the facial recognition for unlock been? That's been a big thing coming into the iPhone.
So with no Touch ID, that's the replacement Face ID. So it's a form of facial unlocking, which isn't as secure, but Apple's pretty confident that it is pretty secure. Like you'd have to get a pretty decent like 3D mask printed of your face to like somebody. I think they said that even that wouldn't work, but it has been proven that you can get 120 quid mask made. Yeah. But who's walking around with 120 quid mask of your face? I don't know.
Hopefully, Russian hackers.
Hopefully no one. So it is pretty secure. So I've actually found it really impressive. It unlocks very quickly, even in low light. Like I was sitting in the back of my friend's car, you know, late last night, and on the way home from the pub, nothing dodgy.
Sounded really ominous.
But like, you know, times when I think, oh, it's probably not going to work, and it still has, which is quite impressive.
So it's good for the bearded gentleman.
Yeah, and apparently it learns, like, so I think apparently I could shave off my beard and it would just kind of learn that I've done that.
Cool.
I'm not going to do that to test the phone.
To be fair, those machines at the airport do that, so you'd expect the iPhone to be able to handle that.
But how do you find it on a personal level? Like, would you recommend it to someone who does use iPhones and is thinking, like, is it worth upgrading or not for that price? Like, what would you say?
It depends how bothered you are about not having Touch ID. Like, I think most people will get used to it. Like, I mean, I'm used to a fingerprint scanner on Android, so I don't think it's any different. And I've got used to this quite quickly. The main annoying thing is that it doesn't actually unlock to the home screen. Like, there's a padlock at the top that does an animation when it's like, oh yeah, I've seen you. But then you still have to swipe up. But you have you have to swipe up from the very bottom of the screen where there's this little line rather than just anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
That's what the new iPad's like, because I just got a new iPad and basically you do, it's still Touch ID, but you do the Touch ID and then it says press home button to unlock. So you have to do two things.
It seems pointless. And I'm used to Androids where you just literally touch it. And then it's there. Away you go.
There's probably a workaround in settings that I haven't looked at.
Maybe, but. And then the other thing is whether you can get used to the other, like,
navigation,
the other implications. The other implication of not having a home button is that everything is all gestures. So to close an app, you've got to swipe up from the bottom. To bring up multitasking, you've got to swipe up and then hold it there for a little bit.
We got used to all these things in the past, though.
Yeah. I mean, I got used to them within a day or two.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't think it's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is the notch. So the screen, like, the screen covers almost entirely the front of the phone, but there's, like, what's dubbed the notch at the top. So the screen goes around the camera and the microphone at the speaker at the top.
Yeah.
That's so that there's still space for the camera and
so that
and
you can still actually make phone calls.
Yeah, so you
on
can still
phone.
Do a bunch of stuff.
Remembers us.
And you know, I think when they announced it, I was like, oh, that looks ridiculously horrible. Like all the other, you know, all the Android makers, just passing
so
it around
so
people can see.
Yeah, it's just the blank.
You know, all the Android makers just let the screen stop and then there is just a small bezel at the top.
Yeah, because you were saying how it pushes out like the percentage of your battery and things like that.
So
it doesn't show it.
If you're watching a video, does the video wrap the notch or does it have a hard line?
You can choose, basically.
Yeah.
So that's when it doesn't look bad if you're playing a game, like in portrait mode, you don't really look up there, to be honest. Like, general use looks fine. It's, if you put a video into full screen, the notch is horrible. Or if you're perhaps playing a game in landscape. So Lewis has got one. He said he was playing a first-person shooter. somebody shot him and he couldn't see them because that person was in the notch.
Oh, like, I'm sure that's like, oh, it's not my fault. He was hidden behind a middle.
So it looks horrible if you're watching a video in landscape, but you don't have to have it full. You can just have black bars to kind of cut it out.
Yeah.
So it's not the end of the world.
No.
So what's your favourite feature of it? Like, what would make it
I mean, I think this if you're trying to decide between this and one of the eights, it's the screen, because so much of it is the same as the eights. It's got the same processor, which is ridiculously fast. It's still waterproof, but the eights are. It's got wireless charging, which is why it's got a glass back. That's one of the reasons it's so heavy.
How much does a wireless charging dock cost?
They vary depending on if you want to buy a cheap budget one.
Yeah.
Most decent ones would be like 20, 30 quid.
Oh, that's not bad.
But yesterday it took me about 3 hours to charge it on wireless. So yeah. It depends. Mm. You know, Apple Watch is going to unlock faster charging with a software update. So, you know, more watts are flowing through, but even then it's not going to be that fast.
No.
It can charge fast over cable, but Apple doesn't supply the fast charger in the box, which is quite frankly ridiculous when you've just paid $1,000.
Yeah.
And every Android phone that comes with fast charging comes with a fast charger, pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty classic Apple mode, really.
So unless you've already got a MacBook with a 29-watt power supply and then you buy the right cable, you're spending about 75 quid to get the right charger and the right cable to fast charge the iPhone X.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, the thing is, I've got a 7 and I'm already like due an upgrade, and I'm like looking at my options, and there's just no way that I'm going to get an 8 instead of the 10. Like, it's just, it just seemed like, even despite everything in my body telling me not to pay that price, like getting the 8 just feels like such a downgrade.
Yeah, such a letdown. So, when you know everyone else walking around with these.
Exactly.
Well, it is. The eights have to be thought of as 7Ss.
Yeah.
Like, they've kind of got away with that a bit, like giving it a full new number.
Yeah.
So they are, like, they're solid phones again, but they're just so boring. Like,
there's nothing exciting about them.
It's like, oh, they have wireless charging.
Like, and I've been 3 hours.
I know. I've been really down on like the jumbo size phone in the past. I really don't like the like beefing up of the size of phones, but I actually think the 10 is just about right.
Is a sweet spot, and all these bezel-less phones are giving you the big screen without the phone being massive. Mm-hmm. That's basically the idea. I mean, it still makes it hard to reach the top of the screen because it's still, the
like
size
me,
of the screen. But, you know, Apple does have reachability features, so you can bring stuff down. It's just
little, for the small-handed gentleman.
Yeah. It's just little quirks, like, you know, the notification center, the control center, now you've got to swipe down from one of the notches and remember which one it is.
Yeah.
Because you can't swipe up from the bottom because that closes apps. So it's just all these little things that if you're really embedded in Apple's system, you're just going to have to spend a few days getting used to, but you will.
Yeah. From a sort of cultural perspective, the big thing when this was coming out was that there was going to be a real supply issue. There was talk of Apple really struggling to get enough units out because of some issues in the supply chain.
Yeah.
There were the classic sort of news segments on the evening news of people queuing around the corner at the Apple store. I heard of people that were there in New York for like 6 days ahead of the opening of the store. These people are lunatics. But did the actual supply issue really rear its head? I didn't see anything after the event of people, you know, really complaining about not being able to get their hands on a unit.
I don't know for sure, but it seems kind of somewhere in the middle. Like, if you ordered one online, as soon as they went on pre-order, they quickly went up to about 5-6 weeks wait.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was quite a big turnout on launch day, but I think because it's so different, a lot of people will have flown over from other countries to get it.
Yeah.
People will be queuing up so that they can sell it on eBay for ridiculous amounts. Like, a lot of those people won't be buying them for themselves.
there were these amazing videos in Hong Kong where people were buying them from the Apple store, and then literally setting up like a stand like next door and just with them like stacked high, and people were just paying cash to like buy them off them for like, you know, like a 20% markup, and like the police were doing absolutely nothing about it. But Henry was saying that Henry Bower, who we work with, was saying that he walked in to like just see what the reaction was like in down in Covent Garden, and people who had pre-ordered were just walking past the queue, walking in, walking out with an iPhone. So that seems like the way to do it. Cool. What about you two? Are you iPhone users?
I am not.
Would you be convinced for £1,000?
No, actually in France is the exact amount is the same as the minimal wage, a month's salary on minimal wage, and I found it a bit too much in my head. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm sure the press didn't love that comparison.
What, like a month's salary or what, how much a month?
It's 12, I think it's 1250 euros,
right?
Like 1250 euros. So that's a bit too much. I was also wondering, like, if you have such an expensive items on you, are you going to be scared to use it in public? I know every year, like, we have, oh, it's too expensive. Maybe people are going to get, like, you know, stolen or, like, get, I don't know, aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're more of a target, but I think the tech now and, like, gadgets are so ubiquitous that, like, I don't think they really make you stand out. I think if you're going to get mugged, you're probably just going to get mugged regardless anyway. Of what you've got on you.
That's true.
Mary?
I am an iPhone user. I have the SE because I have the smallest hands in the
world.
I like
the SE.
So I'm not attracted to large phones, and definitely I think that's just way too much money. I definitely would not upgrade for that.
Yeah.
It looks cool, but I'm not like, yeah, it's just not worth it.
On my upgrade, I'm tempted to actually go with the SE, but I'm just so worried about, like, basically with my phone now, it's just like, breaking down, and I'm so worried about the SE, like, if it doesn't get supported just like within a year, like, just abandoning
it. It's been good for me. I've had it for almost 2 years and there's been absolutely no problems so
far. I think it's
I would say it's not a good option to buy now.
No.
Like 2 years ago maybe.
Yeah. So
fine, I'll have to get a 10. Right.
Just you, Scott.
So I'm gonna go round and ask you yay or nay on the iPhone. So is it an iPhone 10 or is it an iPhone X, Chris?
As in X for like dead.
Yes.
No. Right.
Or X because it really upsets Apple when you call it the iPhone X.
Yeah.
I think for me it is an iPhone 10. Yeah.
It's a dime.
Just.
Mary?
Oh, I haven't reviewed it, so but I'll say X.
X. Oh, I'm going to go 10 because I know I'm probably stupidly going to get one. Cool. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and talk about driverless cars. Miriam.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Driverless cars starting to hit the mainstream these days. But I think from your perspective at Digital Arts, you really want to talk about the unique sort of design principles behind driverless cars. Obviously, it's a very different proposition now that you no longer have what we traditionally expect to be a car with a steering wheel. So what are you seeing in that area?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. So basically this all came up because a book has been released recently by a digital production studio in London called Us2, and they have a whole branch dedicated to autonomous vehicles. So they've kind of released their idea of design principles, and it's all around humanizing autonomy. So it's all about putting the person first and not necessarily like making the coolest like latest tech that like might look or feel good, but actually it's not really going to help the person in the driverless car.
Yeah.
So they're all about what are some actual practical ways that we can make these cars like, you know, trustable and reliable for people who will use them. So I found it really interesting because it definitely brings the technology into a more personal approach. So yeah, they found out some really interesting things, I think. Like they had a lot on accessibility, like in terms of making sure it's for everyone, not just like able-bodied people, but disabled-bodied people, you know, so things like the entrance must cater for all people, entrance into the car. They use kind of like London buses as an example of not quite getting the mark right, because although they have an entrance for disabled people, it's not the same yeah. as for able people. So actually that's segregation, and that's totally not okay, you know, like it should be the same entrance. So they're saying the car, yeah, shouldn't be like that. And things like rear view mirrors on the sides, actually visually impaired people use those to position themselves alongside the car.
Okay.
So driverless cars obviously wouldn't need those, but they're saying you should still probably put something on the side so that they can feel their way towards the entrance of the car. So interesting things like that. And the way that they see them being used, like for more than one function in one day. I don't know if that's something that's been hugely talked about already, but things like in the morning, you'd just be commuting people to and from work, then it could turn into an ambulance, then it could turn into a delivery van.
Yeah, I've heard the delivery thing where basically yeah. at night, people's driverless cars will be like just sort of ferrying goods around, and then you can maybe like essentially lease your vehicle out.
Yeah.
To help pay it off.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're already experimenting with tech at the moment, which is more like a screen on the outside than paint. So it can just change its aesthetic. So it'll be a taxi, and then it will change to like an ambulance. So people on the roads
that's
know.
That's mad. So it's like a chameleon. Mad.
Yeah, totally. So they're kind of saying there won't necessarily be anyone who owns them. It's not like a personal ownership of a car. It's just like they're just used to help the greater good of people yeah. to and from. So I think that's quite interesting. And they even had like interesting ideas on entertainment, because I think a lot of us get carried away with, oh, what could we do in the car if we're not driving? Like, look, all these cool things we'd have time for. But actually, they were saying it, realistically, it's not like public transport. It's not like a plane. You're in this small environment, and you're still on these really busy roads. You know what I mean? You're still kind of preoccupied as to where the car's going and what's happening. So, and you're on a shorter commute. So they're like, ideally, like, there's not going to be screens in there. Everyone has phones now. Like, you don't need a screen in there. No one's going to use that screen, are they? And they said screens in New York taxis, like, were a fail because no one actually used them.
But that's because of the content. Like, the yeah. New York taxi content is terrible.
Yeah, true. They did say that. But they said there's a lot of potential for, like, AR games inside yeah. the car, and that helps with, like, motion sickness, like, tapping on the window, like, playing games like Spot the Yellow Car, that kind of thing for children to help with motion sickness. And they said that would probably be a good way for brands to differentiate between themselves, because the exterior might not look that different, like, mm-hmm. depending on what make, but the interior can really play around with that. So I thought those were kind of some interesting things to think about.
So does the design principles that they come up with, do they reflect what we would think of as a traditional car? Do you still have the sort of five seat slight sort of standard? Is it like about transitioning from what we traditionally think of a car to a driverless without it seeming completely alien?
Absolutely, yeah. I think the whole point is that they don't want it to be alien, and they even said like the Google cars might even look like too cute on the roads. Mm. And actually that's a threat to the cars because people might want to bully those cars. Yeah. But then you also don't want the car to be too scary for other drivers who are just actually driving.
Yeah, so the way that you would like pull out on a learner, you'll just pull out on a Waymo because it looks really cute.
Exactly. Like you just like whatever, like kind of test it. And so obviously there's actually people in that car, so it's quite dangerous. So yeah, they said it has to be somewhere in between that. Like it looks fairly normal, but it's not too scary at the same time.
I didn't think a car could be too cute.
I know. Or bullied.
Yeah, I know. They totally like humanize the idea of a car like being bullied, which is quite interesting. But yeah.
Well, like Herbie. Did anyone ever watch Herbie?
Great film.
That's a cute car. Yeah. Great film. Not the Lohan one. Not the remake with Lindsay Lohan.
No. The originals. Yeah. Same with the Italian Job.
Of course. So do the designs, do they resemble like the Tesla design, or are they a little bit more out there? Because I think the Tesla cars look gorgeous, but they do look like sort of sports cars or just like saloons, but with like a few of the edges like shaved off. And they still have steering wheels because like people get freaked out if there's no steering wheel.
These ones, I don't think they have steering wheels, and they look fairly like simple on the outside, and on the inside it's just like really nice seating but not much else in terms of the little 3D mock-ups that they've made from what I could tell. But it was just interesting to see the mock-ups, like the same car that changes into, like, you know, they had like a minivan on the beach with like a surfboard on top. Like they were really trying to integrate it into, it's not just a car on a road, it's like a part of your lifestyle, which I think was quite interesting. But they did focus a lot on the fact that because there's not a driver there, like for people, I mean, they spoke to a lady who has isolation-based depression, who takes a taxi every day to have a meaningful conversation. So they were basically saying it's never going to be 100% driverless cars because people actually like, you know, taking taxis, and it's for medical reasons as well. So there's a lot to think about. And if you have no driver and the autonomous car randomly stops because a cat ran across the road, how do you know that that is happening? Like, it's just going to randomly stop and no one's there to tell you, like, it's all right, it was just a cat, you know? So it's just a bit weird.
I guess you need,
like,
an Alexa sort of style thing some kind to of be, humanized like, to explain it.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, so...
So does everybody face forwards, or does everybody sit round in like a...
They had it around, actually.
Like a booth in a bar or something.
Yeah, they
like,
had the chairs facing each other because they said you could use it as a mobile workspace. Yeah. Mm. So you have little meetings in the car as it drives around. Like, so bizarre. But, yeah. So they had
little Nespresso machine in the corner.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all very positive. Are there any sort of more dystopic sort of ideas around, like... the fact that everyone starts becoming very sort of isolated in their driverless cars?
Yeah, I think they're very wary of that. And the fact that, like, elderly people, you know how they have to renew their license? I think in the UK anyway, you have to be 70 and then you have to renew or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, what happens if you can't even, like, drive anymore because there's just driverless cars and you want to renew it? I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, this is the age-old problem with driverless cars. Everyone's so excited about them, people forget that one of the reasons that people drive is because it's pretty enjoyable.
Absolutely.
There was a great piece, and I can't remember where it was, but I'll try and tweet it out from the Tech Weekly podcast. But it was about sort of the way that driverless cars threatens the sort of American road trip, and like the, you know, and how embedded that is in popular culture.
Because
it's a symbol of freedom, isn't it? You know, it's like, and then like with elderly people, I think it's always a symbol that they're still sort of independent and in control. And once you start taking that away, it can be really damaging.
Absolutely.
I like the idea of like freedom, because when we're going to have driverless car, we're going to put a destination in it. But like in real life right now, sometimes we see a road that we're like, actually, I'm not in a hurry. I'm going to take the next right and just go there and just
see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I feel like it's going to be a bit...
Not
predictable. I think like the predictability of where you're going to end up is like, it takes a bit of the freedom idea behind a car. And also, can you leave your like kids in the car? Can you just like send them to your grandparents without going in the car?
Oh my goodness.
Wonder question being like, you're not driving.
Yeah, but would you rather do that than just banging them in a taxi?
I don't know. This is the whole trust thing, isn't
just
it?
Different dangers.
Yeah. I'm like, so the taxi, I don't know him, but they're going to be by themselves in the car also.
Yeah, they'll just be on their iPad the whole time.
Yeah,
if they're my cousins, they won't even notice. They wouldn't even notice if there wasn't a driver. They'd be so engaged in their iPads.
Who knows?
I guess what I would like, if I could afford it, would be to have, you know, the driverless option, but a car that I can still drive when I want to, because, like you say, I love driving, and I, for the most part, I wouldn't want to just sit there while it drove me around, unless I wanted to go out and not have to, you know, avoid alcohol.
That's true. That's very
things
good.
Like that.
Like, so on the countryside, I would change a lot, because I know, like, friends who live on the deep countryside, and yes, like, going out is really a question of, like, who's gonna drive back, and there's always someone
somebody's
who, like,
got to.
Somebody's got to. Like, if people get out of control, then yes, that's.
So, yeah, Chris, you're not excited about the driverless Formula One.
No.
Not a big eSports Formula guy.
One's, Formula One's kind of dull enough as it is at the moment.
Very much like.
And I love Formula One.
Exactly. So there is absolutely no yes or no to this question, but I'm going to force one anyway. And I'm going to ask, driverless car or a step too far?
Ooh.
Miriam.
I'm so don't know. I'll say a step too far, but actually I don't drive, so I should probably say driverless car.
Caroline?
I want a hybrid, like you said. Like, I really want one that I can decide if I'm going to, I want to drive it or not. So I want to say driverless car.
Cool.
Yeah, driverless car, I'll try out.
Yeah, I think it's a step too far. All right, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Fairphones. Caroline, so we want to talk about ethical mobile phones. Is that right?
Yes, it is. So I was reviewing yesterday the new launch of the OnePlus 5T, and I realized that it's that company just launched a new smartphone every 6 months. And this is kind of scaring me, not scaring me, but I'm a bit worried about this level of, like, consumption of new product every 6 months, every 6 months, every 6 months. So I was doing some research about the Fairphone 2, which is now available in France through one of our mobile providers, and not only, like, to buy online. And I really like the concept. I think it really needs to be, like, talked about more. The company is struggling a bit right now because they launched a Fairphone 1, I think it's 5 years ago, and they said it was going to be a phone that you could keep, like, for 10 years. But sadly, they just announced that the Fairphone 1 is not going to be looked after anymore, because basically the, like, pieces to make it, like, to repair it are not being made anymore, so they can't buy it. So
yeah, that's kind of a problem.
It is kind of a problem when you sell a product saying it's going to last not forever, but it's going to last, like, way longer than any other cell phone you're going to buy. And after 5 years, you're like, well, actually not.
So let's take a step back quickly and just talk about what the Fairphone is and why it's different to a normal smartphone.
So the Fairphone is basically, the concept is an ethical phone. So it means not only do we know how is it made, in which, like, factory is it made, which minerals are used and where are they mined. But once you get the product, you can repair it more easily. So you can buy, like, a screen. I think if you want to replace your screen, it's like $20 to buy like a new screen, and you can exchange it yourself. You can upgrade the camera, like the first phone. The first Fairphone 2 had, I think, like a 13 megapixel camera, and you could change it, because a few years after they launched a new one that was better, and you could change it yourself.
Yeah, so instead of changing your whole phone, you add modules as you go.
Exactly. So I'm really interested by it, because yes, I think it's a nice counterpart, and I think the public should have the option of either buying, like, the iPhone 10 and pay a lot of money and, like, just keep it a few years, or, like, just sell it again. Or if they want to invest in a product that will be able to, like, keep longer and have a better impact on the world. Because, for example, like, you remember a few years ago, it's 3 years ago, that there was an iPhone scandal about, like, the factories in China.
And there have been many.
Yes. But, like, there still is, actually. Like, I think last year, in, like, 2016, a few employees, well, I mean, a few, like, 10 employees, threatened to, like, throw themselves out of the roof because they didn't get paid for their extra work. And this really made me feel, like, I feel deeply
sensitive to that subject. I really so that's why I want to talk about the Fairphone too, and how, why should people buy it?
Yeah, and on the supply chain right now, you've got the added issue of like the drive towards nationalism. So Trump has been sort of really up on his pedestal about basically reshoring a lot of the iPhone production into the US. You know, it's an Apple company; it should create American jobs, and obviously that causes a huge amount of problems in terms of the cost of production. And the iPhone, as we discussed earlier, is already very expensive.
So expensive, yeah.
So is the Fairphone an expensive product?
It is still an expensive product. I think in euros, sorry, I should have looked the pound.
No, it's fine.
It's like 500 euros.
Okay.
So yeah, like a bit less than like 500 pounds.
But yeah, you, the thing is, you know exactly where your money is going with that.
That
so
is
you know,
lovely.
My
yes,
500 euros, this is where they sourced it. This is what happened. Like you can track the whole process online if you want to, and they have extended like video coverage of how exactly how it's made. So I think if you are going to spend that, you should know, you know, where
yeah,
it's going.
So you get loads of transparency into the way it's made in the supply chain, but then as I've also heard in a bout of literalism, the phone itself is actually transparent, right? Is it see-through?
Yes, you do see-through, and you can see it's on the back. So basically you can really see, like, I think they use a code color, so like people who don't really know about like tech, like know like if it's in like around red, like it's going to be the battery, like when you need to replace, like there's an easy way to like, you hold it, you used it.
Yeah, I did. I reviewed it last year for TechAdvisor, and it's a really clever idea, like not just the ethical stuff. You know, they're trying to create a conflict-free phone. Yeah, supply chain and stuff. But the actual phone itself, although the specs weren't at the time as good as rivals for a similar price, you were buying into that idea, I guess. And the money, you know, it's a bit, I guess it's a bit like buying fair trade coffee something. You're buying into that
lifestyle.
Yeah, and you know, trying to help it get better. So, but yeah, the phone itself was really clever, the way it all came apart. Like you didn't actually need fancy tools. They're just little sliding tabs to take it all apart. Like, so you didn't need to be like, obviously, you know, most people who drop their iPhone probably can't buy a replacement screen and do it themselves, even with some fancy tools. Like, it's pretty difficult.
I got your brother to do mine for me because I didn't have the ability to do it.
Whereas if you break the Fairphone or something goes wrong with it, you can't replace everything, but like if something goes wrong in a certain module, you can just buy that part and it all just comes apart really easily, almost just as easily as changing the batteries in your TV remote kind of thing.
Nice.
Like it's pretty clever.
So what's the story behind the company? Is it where are they from? How are they funded?
So they come from the Netherlands. The first Fairphone, they crowdfunded it.
Yeah, I was thinking that because it like the way that you talked about it stopped being supported sounded a lot like the Pebble, the wearable, which got discontinued recently because it was crowdfunded initially, and then when they ran out of funds, they had to discontinue it. So everyone that had a Pebble, unfortunately, basically had a bricked device.
Yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't happen to the Fairphone.
Hopefully not. Like, they're working on the Fairphone 3 right now, but it shouldn't get released for, like, the next, I think, like, a year and a half at least. So it's really every 5 years they're going to try probably to do, like, new product while being able to, like, keep the other one. They have also critics, just because it's very hard. Like, sometimes it gets hard to, like, buy the replacement bits. So if you have your screen broken, you might have to wait, like, 3 weeks, 4 weeks to, be, like, find one who was available because they're so stretched. They have more demand than they can do, can deal with sometimes.
Yeah.
Some consumer are, like, a bit annoyed about it, which is fair enough. I mean, they're trying to like work around it, but it gets hard. And I think it got launched because of the mining in Congo. I don't know, like we know about it because we're in tech, but in Congo, there's a lot of mines that are illegals, and they use kids to like basically get minerals like tantal, like cobalt, that are used in the phone. And I think like the creator of the Fairphone felt very deeply about this issue of like kid working, and like also the money is used for like drugs and like conflicts and everything.
So it's like Blood Diamond, but for France.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. But like it's
and
crazy.
And without Leonardo DiCaprio and his dodgy accent.
Yeah. Should we do a movie about it? Yeah, that's true.
It's just one of those things where you ask pretty much anybody on the street, what's your phone made of? Where does it come from?
Yeah,
just have no idea.
They'll probably just say China.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is it is assembled in China.
Glass. Yeah. I don't know. Like,
yeah, no idea.
Yeah.
Is there any news on? So when I reviewed it, the idea, as well as just replacing broken parts, was the idea of buying parts. Like I think you alluded to a little bit, buying parts that were better when they came out.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't part of the system when I reviewed the phone, but I said it was a really exciting thing to look forward to. Like you could get a new camera when they'd made a better one. Like,
and
is that still the case?
Yes, they did for the camera. So they did an update of camera. I think, from 9 megapixel to like 13, I think.
Yeah.
And they should probably have another one this year. But except the camera, I don't know for the rest. Like I don't know about the battery or anything.
Yeah.
Hopefully, yes.
Because, like, you know, the Google Project Aura and all these other modular phones kind of never happened, and they were all really exciting. Well, I found them really exciting, the way you could just plug bits in and out, almost like Lego. But this, like, the Fairphone was kind of the closest that I'd actually had in my hand, you know, final product that was like that. But at the time, it was only just to replace broken bits.
Yeah, it's quite a hobbyist thing. I think it would be like a really nice phone to get for like a child, because like that whole sort of assemble it yourself and then trying to like impart some ethics is like probably quite a cool thing to do. Cool. So Fairphone or Bloodphone?
Non-biased question.
Yeah, there's only one answer to this one. Caroline?
Fairphones.
Miriam?
I just want to say my sister and her husband have used Fairphones for years, so definitely Fairphone.
Good on them.
Yeah.
Chris?
Yeah, Fairphone to the max.
Yeah, Fairphone sounds great. Cool. Well, thank you very much for tuning into the UK Tech Weekly podcast. As usual, please go and like us, tell your friends, share the SoundCloud link around on social networks. But from us, thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you very much and see you next week. Bye.
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 UK Tech Weekly Podcast.